Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Elmer Kelton's The Man Who Rode Midnight, narrated by Terrence Aislefort, with performances by Evan Casey, Christopher Graybill, Casey Platt, Tim Carlin, Thomas Keegan, Joe Brack, Dylan Lynch, Lily Beacon, Kimberly Gilbert, Elizabeth Jernigan, Michael Glenn, Faith Potts, Ren Casey, David Coyne, David Harris, Ken Jackson, Bobby Aislefort, Nanette Savard, Johan Detweiler, Bradley Smith, Colleen Delaney, Christopher Sheeran, Richard Rowan, and Mort Shelby. The Man Who Rode Midnight. As the long asphalt miles rumbled monotonously beneath the wheels of the bus, Jim Ed Hendricks watched the green rolling contours of the Dallas suburbs surrender gradually to the sparser, browner vegetation of central Texas, and finally to the ragged gray limestone outcrops of the western hill country. Jim Ed frowned at the faint odor of diesel smoke.
About now, Jack and David are starting their walking tour of Europe. I ought to be with them.
The bus slowed, black diesel smoke thickening in its wake. He read the freshly painted billboard welcoming travelers to Big River, Texas, soon to be your headquarters for Lone Star Lake, the fisherman's paradise. It further declared, if you lived here, you'd be home. His garrulous seatmate turned his whiskey breath to Jim Ed.
Well then, I reckon you're home.
Jim Ed grimaced, thinking of Jack and David backpacking somewhere in France. He would have been with them if things hadn't come unraveled during what was to have been his final semester at the university. Now he was stuck with this place, and a grandfather who was almost a stranger to him. The first houses at the edge of the town had the appearance of having outlived their time and any owner interest in maintenance. One roof sagged in the center, and an old washing machine shared its badly weathered front porch with a ruined couch, its cotton stuffing showing through bleached-out upholstery. Traffic was modest except near a set of steel and wooden corrals and a long cement-tile building whose plain front bore a sign, Big River Livestock Auction, cattle, sheep, goats, and horses every Friday. This was Friday. Jim Ed observed without relish a conglomeration of pickups, trailers, automobiles, and trucks parked haphazardly all over a large open lot. The weekly auction in rural towns was a social event for ranchers and farmers. Big River's passenger and freight load did not justify a regular bus station. The driver pulled in front of the Levitt drugstore and parallel parked in a yellow-painted space. The wide front door opened. The old oil fielder stood up to free Jim Ed from imprisonment in the window seat. Jim Ed reached overhead for a small canvas bag and a tiny hat that sported a small tuft of green feathers. Its brim was smaller even than the kind worn by Dallas Cowboys coach Tom Landry. Its urban conservatism, yuppie he would call it, was in violent contradiction to his t-shirt and his rubber-soled running shoes. The old rigger eyed Jim Ed's hat.
You better watch out for them Big River goat herders and cedar choppers. They may make you eat that jelly bean hat.
Jim Ed placed the hat on his head.
I'm a survivor.
That was the way he wanted it. Just let them try to figure him out. The hat and t-shirt combination was a statement, a proclamation to whomever it might concern, that he danced to his own music. Ahead of him in the aisle, a well-fleshed Mexican woman of middle age carried a suitcase she had not trusted attendants to check for her. She stepped down to an animated reunion with three nearly grown children and a short, dark man Jim Ed took to be her husband. All tried to hug her at once and flung a dozen questions without granting time for an answer. It struck Jim Ed odd that they all spoke English to her, not Spanish. but times were changing. He stood in the open door waiting for the family to clear the way. His glance cut to a tall, broad-shouldered man on whose shirt a tiny silver badge flashed a quick reflection of sunlight. The man was watching the family.
It'd be like some redneck country sheriff to rouse the whole bunch just for being Mexicans.
But the sheriff touched his fingers to the broad brim of a western hat.
Welcome home, Serafina. How's the new grandbaby?
This was the 80s, and times were changing, Jim Ed decided. Or perhaps it was just the vote. The man's smile appeared to be forced. The sheriff's gaze fastened suspiciously upon Jim Ed. It was a look Jim Ed had encountered before, usually preceding an unpleasant introduction to some officer who regarded youth as an automatic violation of one statute or another. He nervously flexed his fingers while the driver opened the baggage compartment low on the side of the bus. Jim Ed's skin prickled as he waited to retrieve his suitcase. He looked impatiently up and down the street.
Just like old West to make me sweat.
Some wines mellowed with age, others soured to vinegar. Jim Ed's grandfather, Wes Hendricks, had always been contrary. The sheriff moved close enough that he could have taken Jim Ed by the arm, looking at him as if he suspected he might be a pimp or a dope pusher.
Your bus will be leaving in a minute.
Jim Ed's stomach drew into a knot. He wished he had left that hamburger in the steamy little bus station cafe where he'd found it.
My grandfather's supposed to meet me here.
You don't look like anybody I know. Who's your granddaddy?
Jim Ed saw a mud-streaked green pickup pull in against the curb across the street. Of a venerable age itself, it drew a four-wheel gooseneck livestock trailer from which much of the original paint had weathered away to leave the dull brown color of rust. A thin, angular old man in faded blue shirt and khaki pants stepped stiffly down into the street. He squinted against the sun and flipped away what was left of a cigarette. His gaze searched the front of the drugstore twice before it settled on Jim Ed with evident reluctance. The old man seemed to consider a moment before he hobbled across the street with a stubborn dignity that did not permit his yielding to traffic. Feeling a measure of relief, Jim Ed nodded in the old man's direction.
That's him.
Wes Hendricks? You don't much favor that old reprobate. You must be Truman's boy.
He started to turn away, but paused.
Them clothes are apt to get you in a fight around here, especially that hat. I don't like fighting in my town.
He gave Wes Hendricks a cool look, then moved on without speaking to him. The old man returned the look in kind, watching the sheriff walk into the brick-fronted drugstore. Jim Ed wondered what his grandfather had done to put himself crossways with the local constabulary. Wes Hendricks took off a stained, misshapen rancher hat and rubbed a sleeve across his sweaty forehead. Jim Ed tensed under the pressure of unyielding gray eyes that appraised him like an unbroken colt and seemed to find him wanting. He had never been able to please his grandfather much. He'd never discerned Wes's standards of excellence.
Howdy, Tater.
Jim Ed waited in vain for Wes to offer him a hug or even a handshake. He didn't want to make the first move, so no move was made.
They call me Jim Ed now.
You used to answer to Tater. Was you having words with Wally Vincent?
Who?
The sheriff.
He just welcomed me to town is all.
Uh-huh.
The old man's expression said he knew better.
He didn't seem to like your looks any better.
His wife inherited the ranch next to mine on the upriver side. He ain't been happy with me lately.
Wes pointed his chin disapprovingly at Jim Ed's canvas bag.
Is that all the suitcase you got?
The driver had finally set the other on the sidewalk. Jim Ed retrieved it. Wes Hendricks continued to study him critically, from the hat to the t-shirt and down to the running shoes.
The reason I'm late, I had to drop a couple of calves off at the auction. I can spare the time if you want to buy yourself a decent hat.
This one will do.
I hope you didn't pay much for it.
Jim Ed felt a rising disappointment and sense of pity. As a boy, on the rare occasions he saw his grandfather, he thought him a strange, overpowering figure, 7 feet tall, a personification of the cowboy heroes on television. This Wes Hendricks stood before him a wizened old man, half a head shorter than his grandson. Shoulders bent, his stubbled face looked more like Gabby Hayes than John Wayne. He had whiskey on his breath, like the oil fielder on the bus. Jim Ed had been given scant opportunity to become well acquainted with his grandfather. The few times he visited his grandparents' little ranch during his boyhood had been largely his mother's doing, her sense of family duty and propriety overcoming the fact that an antagonism more formidable than a stone wall stood between Wes Hendricks and son Truman, Jim Ed's father. Grandmother Maudie used to visit Dallas a couple of times a year, but Wes seldom came with her. When he did, he paced the floor like a caged cat and always left earlier than intended. On the rare occasions when Jim Ed's father reluctantly accompanied his family to his boyhood home, he seemed likely to break out with hives and always grateful to see the place in his rearview mirror. As Jim Ed studied this somber face, sun-punished, leathered and creased, he knew he had little in common with Wes Hendricks except the blood and the name.
Damn Jack, damn David, damn France.
From the direction of the bank across the street, Jim Ed recognized the druggist, Orville Levitt, striding briskly toward them, a small canvas cash bag in his hand. His quick step belied the fact that he was as old as Wes Hendricks. He had given Jim Ed an ice cream cone 15 years ago when Wes went into his store to buy liniment. He served as mayor of this dubious metropolis then, and probably still did. Jim Ed thought he recalled his grandfather saying they punched cattle together a long time ago. The friendship must have gone sour, because Levitt managed only a civil and distant nod. Wes Hendricks nodded back.
Orf?
His eyes softened with a transient sadness, then cut away as the druggist entered the store. The old man started into the street. Wes continued his slow and methodical pace. Jim Ed waited for the car to move on, then proceeded around his grandfather's pickup. He could only guess how long ago Wes had bought the vehicle. Probably the last year cattle had paid a decent profit to the men who raised them. That had been a long time. The front was battered more than a little, the bumper scarred by brush and rocks, and God knew what else that got in the way of a driver 77 years old. Jim Ed placed the suitcase and the canvas bag in the pickup bed on top of several empty tow sacks to which green crumbs of cottonseed feed still clung amid a settling of dust and dried curled leaves garnered as Wes had driven across his pastures, making his own road wherever he went. Jim Ed gripped the door handle and pondered the prudence of offering to drive. His grandfather started the engine as if he had read the thought and rejected it. Jim Ed shoved aside a coiled rope and a bridle to make room on the seat. He had to move an assortment of stock medicine, wire pinchers, and general working tools to make foot room on the floor.
Ow!
He bumped his head on a rifle racked against the rear window.
What's that for?
You never know when you may run into a son of a bitch that needs shooting.
Wes reached down protectively to retrieve a bottle, around which a brown paper sack was tightly twisted. Jim Ed slammed the door twice before it caught. It had been sprung by some mischance suffered in the line of duty. Wes started to pull out into the street. A livestock truck roared around him, trailing smoke and dust.
I'll drive. You city boys spook me.
The window was streaked where a recent light shower had tracked through the heavy layer of old dust. Jim had rolled it down so that he could see out. He saw little that had changed since he had come for his grandmother's funeral 2 years ago. Like most small towns too far from the city to profit from urban employment, this one looked like last year's vine dying on the trellis. Ranches and farms were no longer enough to keep a rural town's blood pumping. There might be a couple more vacated buildings on the courthouse square. He was sure he remembered a small grocery store in a stone structure now boarded up by weathered plywood sheets. An abandoned theater's marquee threatened to slump onto the sidewalk. Ironically, a sign in the adjoining window advertised video cassettes for rent.
Wonder the place hasn't all died.
Jim Ed felt no particular sense of loss. His few visits to the town had been mercifully short. Wes Hendricks thrust out his left arm to signal a turn. He never had converted to directional lights.
A lot of them are holding on, hoping the lake will make them rich.
Wes Hendricks had been spare of flesh all his life. But now he looked even thinner than Jim Ed remembered him. Like many old cowboys living in a batch camp, he probably subsisted more on black coffee than on solid food since the death of his wife. And maybe whiskey, judging by his breath. The best thing that could happen to him, Jim Ed reasoned, was that he move to town and settle into a steady diet of somebody else's cooking. That was one thing about which Jim Ed's father was right.
Dad believes they're going to condemn your ranch for the lake. Wishes you'd quit fighting and sell them the land.
His grandfather's hard knuckles bulged on the steering wheel.
When cows climb trees.
Since farther back than Jim Ed could remember, his grandfather had been missing the first joint on his right index finger. That was one mark of a roper, for many a finger had been ground off between a rope and a saddle horn. He pointed the stub at Jim Ed.
I know your daddy didn't send you here just because he thought I needed help. He always hated that ranch from the time he was a button. He sent you to try and talk me into giving up.
The subject had indeed arisen. Jim Ed regarded Wes Hendricks as still trying to live in a time buried and gone. Wes probably had little conception of life beyond the outside fences of that worn-out shirt-tail ranch to which he had devoted more than 40 years of his life. The few times Grandmother Maudie forced him into visiting the city, he had been like a child, lost and bewildered.
You could take the money and go anywhere you want to.
I'm already where I want to be. I spent the first 30 years of my life hunting that place. I ain't got 30 left to find me another one like it. If your daddy sent you here to lecture me, I'd just as well put you back on the bus.
That would have suited Jim Ed, except that at the moment he had nowhere to go. He lacked the money to follow Jack and David on that promised trip to Europe. He could not return to Dallas for a while, not after the blow-up that resulted from his final semester failure. The row culminated in an ultimatum from his father.
I haven't said a word.
I tried to tell your daddy I'm no invalid. I don't need your help.
Jim Ed thought he wouldn't be much help.
Time you've dug 100 post holes and put horse tracks all over the pastures, you'll wish you was back in Dallas.
I already wish that.
How's your mama?
Just fine.
Mama was always just fine. She never moved out of Truman Hendricks' shadow long enough for any life of her own.
Good woman. I felt guilty about not warning her before she married your hard-headed daddy.
Wes lapsed into silence, turning loose of the wheel to fish in his shirt pocket. The pickup angled toward the ditch while Wes tried to worry one cigarette out of a pack. Jim Ed had to muster a strong will not to take hold of the steering wheel. That would have been surrender of a sort. Wes corrected the course and struck a kitchen match against the dashboard, scarred by 1,000 or 2 similar strikes. The old man stared at Jim, ignoring the road.
I wished I'd had you with me 20 years ago. Now your city raisins probably put you beyond salvation.
Jim Ed was too tired from the trip to give his grandfather the satisfaction of baiting him into an argument.
Probably.
The Hendricks Ranch lay 9 miles east of town. A state farm-to-market asphalt pavement labored over, through, and around the cedar-fringed hills, spending 3 miles to gain 2. Now and again, Jim Ed glimpsed the sparkling river, born of 1,000 tiny springs that seeped and trickled and bubbled between flat seams of gray limestone layers deposited in the beds of ancient seas, later ripped and torn asunder by rumblings and spasms and upheavals in the earth's restless crust. The river's gift of life had drawn wild animals of infinite variety, making it a hunting ground for uncountable generations of warrior tribes who battled to gain supremacy, mixing their blood with its clear, cold waters. One after another held dominance for a time, then was forced to yield to someone stronger in a long succession of violent displacements. The white man finally drove away the last of the bronzed warriors, then fought one another for the right to this river and the bounties of the land around it. Sheepmen fought cattlemen, and both resisted the farmer. The face has changed, the voice has changed, but always the river remained, and the struggle to own it. Along the road, especially near to town, Jim Ed saw perhaps 20 fancy gateways of stone and steel and brick, bearing names like Angora Acres and Rancho Restful, the Poor Farm. He looked twice at a sign that declared Heavenly Days Ranch. These were the harbingers of an urban invasion, 10 and 20 and 50-acre ranchettes, home sites for city folk who wanted to play at the rustic life without suffering its discomforts. Most seemed to have a horse or two, and dogs of every size and hue that stood at the roadside, challenging the passing traffic.
The rancher who owned that land probably made more profit cutting it up than he ever saw from livestock.
It's ruined forever. It'll never go back into production.
How much did it ever produce in the first place?
It made meat for people's bellies and fiber to put clothes on their backs. Now all it raises is taxes and dogs.
Wes Hendricks's gateway was plain. No sign to market. Nothing bearing his name except a mailbox mounted on a cedar post at the edge of the road. He stopped the pickup and waited for the dust to pass.
Trader, I wish you'd see if I got any mail.
Jim Ed knew it was useless to tell him he had disliked the nickname Tater even as a boy. Stepping out of the pickup, he was a little shaken by the mailbox. Though it still bore a shiny silver newness, it was punctured by perhaps a dozen bullet holes. Inside, he found a couple of newspapers, a bill, and a handful of junk mail. He closed the box, scratching his finger on a sharp edge left by a lead slug passing through. He dropped the mail on the seat of the truck and sucked the little ruby of blood which formed atop the scratch. His concern was genuine.
They may shoot at you next, and not just your mailbox.
Kids is all. Their folks cuss old Wes Hendricks so the kids think it's all right. I don't get my innards into an uproar over something as trifling as a mailbox.
A quarter mile from the pavement, Wes turned off to the left, onto a twin-rut road worn into the turf by years of driving over the same tracks. Jim Ed had to grip the inside door handle to avoid being bounced out of his seat. He grabbed the mail as it pitched toward the floorboard. Wes bullied the vehicle up a steep grade and stopped on a barren limestone slab atop a rocky hill.
Get out, Tater.
Wes pushed his door open and hobbled stiff-legged beside him to the rim rock. He pointed.
Look yonder. I want you to see why I'm not letting them take this place without putting up a fight. Oh, you ever see such a pretty sight in all your life?
Jim Ed blinked. All he could see was the side of the hill, layer stacked upon layer of limestone, steeper even than the side by which they had climbed. A remnant of spring blue bonnets and the scatterings of faded red and yellow Indian paintbrushes still showed in spots where the sheep or goats had not yet found them. Down below, live oaks grew in dark green motts, almost black, and beyond them, a line of towering native pecan trees marked the river's course. Heavy foliage hid the water from view. As scenery, he considered it a long way from the Alps. He refrained from giving voice to the thought.
Nice.
Jim Ed wanted to be kind. He knew instantly that it was not enough. Wes gave him a glance that spoke both of anger and despair, then hobbled back toward the pickup. Wes peeled the paper sack down from the neck of the bottle and took a drink. He kept his silence as he drove. Wes's moody silence stirred Jim Ed to a little guilt and a need for at least an effort at communication. He had always heard that nothing set a rancher or farmer to talking quite so easily as bringing the topic around to rainfall, nor the lack of it.
Looks like you've had moisture this spring.
We had a couple inches last week. We just need one more.
Jim Ed judged that this country had needed just one more since the receding of Noah's flood. Wes said nothing else. So much for conversation about the weather. Jim Ed tried, but he could not think of another topic in which they might share an interest. The road labored over a steep hill before pitching down toward the little headquarters. Jim Ed saw the old frame house dwarfed among a dozen or so big live oak trees. The dark, crooked branches and their heavy year-round foliage shielded the structure from much of summer's hot afternoon sunshine and screened out some of winter's cold north wind. The house was probably as old as Wes himself, its roof divided into four equal quarters that came to a peak at the center. The windows were tall, so summer's southern breezes could dispel heat otherwise trapped beneath the high ceilings. It had been 70 years since people quit building houses in that style. Most ranches, which had not torn them down by now, were delegating them to transient help. Beyond the house lay Wes's livestock working corrals. A few of steel, but most of aging lumber and cedar pickets, sadly showing their years. One, most ancient of all, was built of stones stacked without mortar, a legacy from the hard labor of ambitious German immigrants who braved their way into these resisting hills when this had still been Indian country. Almost everything he could see looked old. An exception was a steel barn Wes put up after a high wind took part of the roof from his old one and set the rest of the tired structure to leaning eastward. Jim Ed remembered his father's anger. Truman Hendricks declared that Wes let Grandmother Maudie live in that drafty old house for 40-odd years, but he built a new barn for himself. The priorities of an old-fashioned, tight-twisted rancher were not easy to understand. A black-and-white border collie raced out to greet the pickup. Tail wagging furiously, the dog whipped back around and kept pace the last 50 yards. A blue pickup of recent vintage stood in front of the barn. A man sat on the concrete step, whittling. A large boy whistled the dog to come to him, away from the pickup's path. As Wes pulled to a stop, the man closed the pocket knife blade with the heel of his hand and stood up. He had a smile big enough for somebody to fall into, Jim Ed thought. Except for the Mexican family at the bus, this was the first genuine smile he'd seen since he'd arrived in Big River. It was also the first time he'd heard cheer in his grandfather's voice.
Hey, that's Bill Roper. He's foreman of the C-Bars.
C-Bars? What's that?
The Chatfield Dawson Ranch. It surrounds us pretty near, except upriver where Wally Vincent's ranch lays. His wife's, I mean. Bill's a throwback to the old-time cowboys like I used to know. You got to hunt a long ways to find his caliber anymore.
The old man seemed to shed 10 years. He alighted from the pickup with spring in his step. He shook hands with the visitor, a grinning bear of a man who appeared to be edging into middle age. The look of him said cowboy, not the kind who slouched around Dallas country western honky-tonks in tall crowned hats and high-heeled boots never scarred by spurs, but the kind who knew which end of the cow got up first and could read a horse's mind by the way it twitched its ears.
Wes, when you gonna sell me and Johnny that dog?
I couldn't do that. Old Pepper's the only one here who always knows what he's doing.
Wes gripped the boy's heavy shoulder and gave him a gentle shake.
I swear, Johnny, you ought to make fullback on the varsity this fall.
I just wish I could.
As Jim Ed walked around the pickup, the collie backed away skeptically, trying to maneuver downwind to sample the scent without moving near enough to be touched. The dog was putting him on probation. Roper looked at Jim Ed with curiosity, but he asked no questions. Wes seemed hesitant for a moment.
Yeah, that's my grandson, Tater. Come out to show me how the city folks do things.
Ashamed of me.
Jim Ed felt surprised he was not resentful. Allowances had to be made for an old man's ways. He made an attempt at correcting the Tater.
I'm Jim Ed Hendricks.
Roper reached out with a hand big and calloused and strong enough to have crushed Jim Ed's into splinters, but the shake was gentle. It was also tentative, as if Roper agreed with the dog that an early judgment was not in order.
Pleased to meet you, Tater. I don't know what you can show your old granddaddy. He's already forgotten more than most of us will ever know.
Jim Ed's answer was a simple nod, ambiguous enough to be whatever the man expected. Roper tried to hold the smile, but it faded after the first moments of greeting and shared friendship. Roper's eyes held a haunted look that betrayed uneasiness, perhaps even fear. Roper's son appeared to be about 12 or 14, built to follow in his father's big footsteps. He stared at Jim Ed with open and honest curiosity, his gaze roving from the narrow-brimmed hat to the running shoes.
I'm fixing to find out tomorrow what Tater knows about digging post holes. We'll be working on that new fence.
New fence? I thought you'd be holding off on that till the lake thing is settled.
I can rotate the grazing better if I split up that north pasture.
Now Jim Ed was surprised. Rotation grazing was a fairly modern concept, taught in all the best agricultural schools. He had taken for granted that his grandfather had not embraced a new idea in 40 years.
You'll come up to the house. Won't take long to fix a fresh pot of coffee.
Most things about the house spoke of age, but Jim Ed was intrigued to find the kitchen stove fired by butane gas. It looked some years from being new, so he must have seen it on an earlier visit. His memory had simply played him false. He had expected an obsolete wood-burning range. Well, it was gone. Grandmother Maudie probably put her foot down. Wes carefully drained off the cold morning coffee into the sink while holding back some of the wet grounds with his hand. He added fresh coffee to the leavings and piled the pot with water, then set it on a burner and turned up the flame. Jim Ed did not believe civilized people boiled coffee anymore. Perhaps civilized people didn't. Wes turned to the boy.
Sorry I ain't got no sody pop, but you'll find ice cream in the freezer.
Bill Roper snapped his finger.
That reminds me. Johnny, I wish you'd run out to the pickup and fetch that sack your mama sent for Wes.
The boy had continued his guileless staring at Jim Ed. He seemed not to want to back away.
Yes, sir.
They still raise him to snap two out here, Jim Ed thought. The boy went out the door, the dog following with tail in high gear. Roper's face went serious.
I hate to come and dump my troubles on you, Wes. You got enough of your own.
Wes motioned for Roper to seat himself at the table.
What's bothering you, Bill?
Had company over at the C-Bars today. I'm a real estate agent out of San Angelo.
Not the first one of them you've ever seen, was it?
No, but they never stayed long before. Most of the time, Miss Livy never let them get past her front porch. This one went plumb into the parlor. Then she asked me to take him in the pickup and give him a look-see over the place.
Wes stared a moment without blinking.
That don't mean she really figures on selling.
I mean she's thinking about it. The ranch has lost so much money in the last few years.
Roper shook his head.
For the first time in my life, I'm scared. I put 20 years into that job. I don't know what me and Hallie will do if I lose it.
Wes's eyes were sad.
There's something way out of balance in the world. People over in Africa are starving because they can't buy food. People here are starving because they can't sell it.
At least you own this place, Wes. You got grounds to fight them when they come to move you. I'm just a hired hand. I got no right to even speak my mind.
Wes stared out the door at the boy coming up the porch steps with a brown paper grocery sack in his hand.
It's hard times for a lot of us. I just never believed it happened to anybody as big as the C-Bars.
Bill Roper grimaced.
Maybe if Carr Dawson hadn't died so young. His mother tries, but Miss Livy's getting old.
Ain't we all?
Wes glanced impatiently toward the coffee.
Some people are looking for better times. Wally Vincent greeted Tater to town, showed him his sheriff's badge. He figures they'll build the dam on his wife's land and back the water over mine, and the new lake will make him rich. Me and my little old ranch stand in the way.
Roper nodded.
Some people will let you mess with their wife, and some will even let you ride their horse. But getting between them and money, the friendship's over.
The boy set the sack on the table.
Hallie sent you something for cooking, Wes. There's pie, amongst other things.
Wes's eyes gleamed in pleasure when he fumbled a foil wrapping from a package.
Oh, Apple. Tell her she oughtn't to have done it, but I'm much obliged. We'll cut that pie as soon as the coffee's done.
Some of the trouble left Roper's eyes. He rubbed his stomach that pushed against a well-worn silver belt buckle bearing the figure of a steer wrestler and the words, San Angelo, 1967.
Hallie's been nagging me to watch my girlish figure.
But he made no move to leave.
If you'd like some more for cooking, you come over Live Oak Camp tomorrow. We'd be tickled to have the use of your roping arm and a branding pen.
The light flickered again in Wes's eyes.
Live Oak Camp.
Then he looked at Jim Ed. And the light faded.
I reckon not, Bill. Tater just got here.
Bring him. He'd be welcome.
Well, he's a city boy. He's apt to be standing in the gate when you bring the cattle in.
Roper studied Jim Ed, but if he came to an opinion, he kept it to himself.
Looks like a college boy to me. College boys can learn anything.
He leaned over the stove and lifted the lid from the coffee pot.
I believe it's about ready to pour.
Jim, Ed, and Wes stood on the porch, watching the dog trail Roper's pickup the first 50 yards, and then stand in the thin curtain of dust it raised, climbing the hill.
Well, it looks like everybody around here's not mad at you.
Everybody ain't hoping to make something off the land that belongs to me.
That pie was probably more than Wes normally ate for supper, Jim Ed judged by the thin look of him.
We'll tend to the stock first, then fix supper. I reckon a growing boy needs his nourishment.
I'm not a boy, and I'm done growing.
Your Uncle James Edward never could seem to get enough to eat. He was always looking ahead to supper.
An old pain came into Wes's eyes. He looked through the screen door to the mantel, to a studio portrait of a young cowboy who had some of Wes Hendricks's features. James Edward Hendricks. He died before Jim Ed was born. Jim Ed inherited his name.
Everything I ever wanted was for James Edward and your daddy. All the time they was growing up, I was getting this ranch ready for them. Your daddy never liked it, but James Edward did. Wasn't nothing he couldn't do a horseback. He could tell what a cow was fixing to think before she thought it. Love this place, that boy did. When you come along and they gave you his name, I sort of hoped that in a way you were him. Come back to me. Remember when you was little, I let you ride in front of me on a horse?
Jim Ed remembered all too well. He had wet his britches out of fear that his grandfather would let him fall and the fool horse would step on him.
You couldn't say granddad, so you called me Dadu. I kept hoping your daddy might get tired of the city and move back to Big River. Then I could raise you to be the image of your uncle. But that's the way with dreams. The bad ones just haunt you, and the good ones never come true. People moved away from the country in them days. They didn't move to it.
When he turned from the picture, his eyes were more angry than sad.
Now it's in style for people to quit the city and move to the country, only they want to bring the city with them. Time they get through changing it into everything they come here to run away from, there won't be nothing left of the country.
They'll pay you three times what this place is worth.
How do you know what it's worth? How do you put a price on 40-odd years? You ain't lived half that long.
He stalked through the house and into the kitchen. Jim Ed walked to the mantel and studied the picture of the uncle he knew only from a handful of old photographs. James Edward Hendricks could as well have lived 100 years ago for all the closeness Jim Ed could feel toward him. His attention shifted to another photograph, one much older and turning brown. It showed a slender young man on a pitching black horse, a rodeo crowd in the background. In fading ink near the bottom of the picture, he recognized his grandmother's hand. Wes Hendricks on Midnight. It seemed unreal somehow that Wes Hendricks had ever been that young. Had it not been for the writing, Jim Ed would not have recognized him.
You better change into some old clothes and meet me out at the barn. Even a city man ought to learn how to feed stock and handle a milk cow. They'll pave over the last blade of grass someday and drown the last tree in an artificial lake so some damn fool from town can race a motorboat. You ought to at least remember what it used to be like.
Little had changed in his uncle's room in almost 30 years. School books and a dozen Luke Short paperback Western novels still sat on a bookshelf, along with a silver trophy for exhibiting the county livestock show's grand champion steer in 1956, the last year of James Edward's life. Above the bookshelf hung a guitar, probably not dusted since Maudie Hendricks died. Jim Ed went out into the living room. His grandfather sat slumped in a reclining chair that looked twice too large for him, reading the San Angelo Standard Times.
What do you do around here for entertainment?
Wes lowered the newspaper.
Entertainment? There's a whole shelf of good books yonder.
Jim Ed had already looked them over. Not one was on any subject he considered relevant to the real world.
There's always a television.
It was a color set, probably Grandmother Maudie's choosing. Jim Ed turned it on, but found only two stations. One resembled a January snowstorm. The other was showing an old movie he'd already seen and didn't like.
Maudie always watched the soap operas. Them people was like old friends to her.
How do you keep from going crazy out here all by yourself with nothing to do?
A man can do worse than be by himself. He can read, he can think. He can sit on the porch and listen to the sounds of life out yonder.
There's nothing out there for miles.
You just gotta learn how to listen. It's all around you. Like music.
Jim Ed frowned. His father was right. Wes Hendricks had been on this place too long for his own good.
James Edward knew. He was tuned to this place. He could tell you the name of everything that sang in the dark.
Jim Ed stood in the open front door, listening. He heard only the high-pitched noise of crickets, the chatter of birds, the croaking of a frog down at a water tank, a cow bawling somewhere, the distant bleating of a lamb. He heard no music.
It can't be somebody else. I'm not James.
No, you sure as hell ain't.
Wes got up and hunched out into the kitchen. He poured leftover coffee into a cup and fetched a bottle of bourbon out of the pantry. He poured a liberal amount of whiskey into the coffee and extended the bottle toward Jim Ed.
You don't drink this stuff, do you?
Jim Ed didn't get a chance to answer.
You're too young. It can be balm to an old man, but it's a curse to a young one.
He drank some of the coffee and refilled with pure whiskey. Carrying the cup, he touched the wall switch and left the kitchen dark.
Good night, Tater.
Jim Ed had trouble going to sleep. He dozed off, then awakened, momentarily disoriented. A gentle breeze from the south lifted the curtains around the open window. It was the noise that bothered him, or rather the lack of it. He heard no rumble of traffic, no horns, no television played too loudly. Or perhaps he did. There was a sound of some kind, distant music that reached him in fragments torn by the breeze. He thought for a moment it was his imagination, but he heard it again. He wondered if Wes might have left his bedroom radio playing softly when he went to sleep. Then he decided the sound came from outside. He slid out of bed and went to the window. He heard it more clearly, though it came from the other side of the house. He walked through the living room and out onto the porch. He saw his grandfather's slight figure silhouetted against the moonlit barn, the dog beside him. Wes Hendricks sat on a bench under one of the huge oak trees, guitar on his lap. He played a slow, melancholy melody, vaguely familiar, though Jim Ed did not know its name. He had not seen his grandfather weep at the funeral of Maudie Hendricks, and he had wondered how the old man could maintain such unyielding self-control. He sensed that Wes was weeping now, through the music he drew from that old guitar. Jim Ed listened until he began to feel uneasily that he was intruding on private grief. He quietly retreated into the house and returned to his bed. The last he knew as he dropped off to sleep, that music still reached him through the open window, like a faraway cry for help that he did not know how to answer. At the Chadfield Dawson Seabar Ranch headquarters, 15 miles from Wes Hendricks' place, Bill Roper turned over slowly in bed for the 20th time to look at the lighted face of a digital clock on the nightstand. It said 4:15, 3 minutes later than the last time he had looked.
Damn.
He reached out to turn off the alarm set for 4:30. His wife's voice startled him.
Oh, we just as well get up. It's almost time anyway.
I didn't go to wake you. I've been lying here with my eyes open for an hour.
Oh, longer than that.
Hallie switched on the bed lamp.
I heard you in the bathroom at 2:30. Didn't you sleep at all?
Not much.
Bill Roper looked at his wife, lying there facing him with her nightgown hanging loosely off one shoulder, a long strand of dark brown hair dangling in front of a face that to him was still the high school cheerleader he'd known 20 years ago. He was compelled to reach out and touch her with a hand large and strong and gentle. Her warm hand came up to close over his fingers and bring them down to press firmly against her soft bosom.
Still thinking about Wes or about us?
Both. In a way, we're in the same fix. We don't want to leave where we're at, but other people make the decisions.
You're a good man, Bill. A good man will always find something.
Ranch jobs like mine don't hang off the trees. This has been the best one a man could hope for.
Oh, we'll be all right, Bill.
Roper frowned. That was Hallie's response to every challenge that arose. He envied her quiet faith and acceptance of whatever came, but it placed all the more burden on him to try to control those challenges.
I kept thinking about Wes's grandson.
Don't tell me he kept you awake.
I've been comparing him and Johnny. I'm glad we've been able to bring Johnny up here instead of in some town. That Tater, I don't know how to figure city boys like him. It's like trying to read a book in another language.
If he's kin to Wes, he has good stuff in him. Give him a chance.
Johnny's real taken by him. I don't guess he ever saw anybody quite like him before. If we have to leave this place and move to a city, Johnny could wind up being like that Tater.
You worry too much. You've got Johnny off to a strong start. He won't make a wrong turn now. Give yourself more credit, Bill. Give us more credit. And Johnny, too.
He pulled himself up to a sitting position and slid his legs from beneath the cotton sheet that had been his only cover. Hallie reached to touch his arm, and he warmed to her. Even after sharing a bed with her all these years, he was still easily aroused when she touched him unexpectedly.
Worrying over this ranch will just make an old man of you for nothing, because there's precious little you can do about it. You can't make the cattle market better. You can't make the cows have twins. Maybe it's time you went on your own anyway. That's what you've wanted for years. And this is the time to buy in, isn't it? When everything seems to be at the bottom.
It's what we've been saving for, but we haven't saved enough yet. We don't have the money to buy livestock and pay for land lease, too. Even if we could find a good place available. I need to hold on to this job for a few more years.
He pushed to a stand, bringing his hand to his hip where an old twinge seemed to be worsening. A legacy of bad horses, long dead but well remembered. The follies of youthful cowboy exuberance were coming home to roost in his middle age. He walked to the window. He looked up at stars sharp and crystalline in the black sky. Not a sign of sunup showed yet.
Fixing to be a pretty day for working cattle at Live Oak Camp.
He pulled on his trousers first. He'd never gotten over an old shyness about exposing his bare legs to Hallie any longer than necessary. He couldn't believe there was anything attractive about a man from the waist down, even to a loving and generously tolerant woman like Hallie.
I wish you'd let me hire Serafina Sanchez to help you with the cooking over there today. It'll be a heavy load for you.
You've been carrying a heavy load for this ranch yourself. If Miss Livy has to sell the place, maybe at least it'll go to someone who has the money to do things properly for a change, not have to scrimp and make do on nothing and work double to keep from hiring more help.
Chances are that anybody who buys this place will already have his own crew. They want to start fresh and not have a holdover like me always telling them how we used to do things.
He reached down to pick up a high-heeled boot.
You know what that real estate salesman told me yesterday? He said he's got a client out of Houston looking for a hill country ranch he can turn into a year-round hunting preserve. He wants to stock it with exotic game animals and build a hunting lodge. A glorified man ranch. Even if they was to make me an offer, I couldn't stay here for that. Old Major Chaffee would turn over in his grave.
There's always my brother John. He's been after you for years to move to San Angelo and join him in the grocery business.
Roper tugged on his boot.
What can I do in a store? Sack groceries? I know about raising beef and mutton. I'm too far along in life to go back to school or change directions.
Hallie slipped her arms around him from behind. He felt the warmth of her breasts against his back and her comforting lips pressed against his shoulder.
We'll do all right. We've always done all right.
As long as he had known her, he'd never seen anything shake her much. She could walk through shambles and find a four-leaf clover. He turned into her arms and held her, and an old wanting kindled quickly. His gaze drifted again to the clock.
Damn, we just had another 20 minutes.
We don't. But it'll be night again by and by.
Wes Hendricks's knuckles rapped fiercely against Jim Ed's door.
Rouse up, Tater. Daylight's wasting.
Jim Ed reluctantly opened his eyes. He saw only blackness. Daylight? The old man fumbled inside the door and found a wall switch. Even behind closed lids, the bright light brought pain to Jim Ed's eyes.
Now put the coffee on, you fix some bacon and eggs while I go out and milk old Red.
Allowing no time for questions or objections, he left with the milk bucket in hand. If Wes had not awakened Jim Ed already, the slamming of the screen door would have done it. Jim Ed listened to his grandfather's boots tromping heavily across the porch and down the wooden steps into the yard.
He probably woke the rooster.
Jim Ed found the floor with his feet and stumbled to the closet where he had hung his clothes. It took him a minute to remember he and Wes were going to work cattle today. He shuddered and looked at the clock beside his bed. 4:30. He couldn't remember when he had been up this early, except a few times he had been up this late. No wonder Wes was drawn up, thin as a whippoorwill. He didn't get enough sleep. Yawning, Jim Ed pulled the rock music t-shirt over his head. Instead of the running shoes, he put on a pair of cowboy boots Grandmother Maudie had given him once for Christmas. They had been designed to fit into a set of leather-covered stirrups and rub against a horse, but Jim Ed had restricted their service mostly to cement and asphalt. If bootmakers still depended upon working cowboys for their trade, theirs would have become a vanished art. He found eggs and bacon in the refrigerator and poked around in the lower cabinets for a skillet. Wes's kitchen had most of the standard conveniences. Grandmother Maudie's doing, Jim Ed surmised. He heard his grandfather's boots on the porch. The dog Pepper stood just outside the screen, tail wagging vigorously.
Pepper loves milking time. I always pour a little warm milk right out of the bucket.
Do you milk this early every morning?
No, I ordinarily don't get up till 5:30. But today, we got a ways to travel.
It doesn't take long to spend the night around this place, especially for nocturnal guitarists.
Wes strained the fresh milk into a crock jar.
Sorry if I woke you up. Sometimes when I can't sleep, making a little music helps. I'll try not to disturb you again.
The old man spent a moment frowning at the t-shirt, but said nothing about it.
It's your place. You do whatever you feel like.
I'd always kind of hoped it might be your place someday.
I'm a city boy. What would I know about operating a place like this?
Man can learn anything he sets his mind to if he wants it bad enough. There's the hitch, I suppose. Wanting to.
Jim Ed plopped the eggs onto two plates alongside the bacon. He removed the bread from the toaster and found it had stayed half a minute too long. It was edible enough, but blackened on the edges. Wes eyed it warily.
You know how to make biscuits?
I'm afraid not.
I'll teach you first chance we get. A ranch would just as well have all hands afoot as not to have any biscuits.
The old man had left two horses in a small foot trap the evening before. Shaking the steel bucket that contained the little feed, he coaxed them into a cedar picket corral.
I take it for granted that you know how to ride.
Some friends of mine have a horse farm near Denton. I go there with them sometimes.
The Seabars ain't no horse farm. But maybe it won't be too much in the way.
Jim Ed sensed the loss of the jovial mood that had set his grandfather to humming when he first went out to milk. The t-shirts, or burned toast instead of biscuits, perhaps. Either would have reminded Wes that Jim Ed was a fish floundering on dry land.
It isn't my fault I don't belong here. Nobody asked me if I wanted to come.
Wes talked softly to one of the horses, and it accepted the bridle. Jim Ed couldn't tell the horse's color. The morning was still too dark.
You can use that saddle.
Jim Ed approached him with a blanket.
He don't know you. Just keep talking and let him know you won't hurt him.
How do I know he won't hurt me?
Faith, boy. Faith can shake a mountain down.
Wes's gaze went to Jim Ed's tiny brimmed hat.
That dinky thing won't keep the sun out of your eyes.
It's the only one I have.
You can wear a straw hat of mine.
Jim Ed would have accepted the offer if his grandfather had not made a challenge of it.
I don't mind a little sun.
Get in the pickup then. Daylight's wasted.
Jim Ed saw not even a promise of daylight. Any early color that might be emerging low against the dark sky was blocked off by a rugged line of rough mountains to the east.
Why do you keep goats?
For the mohair. I shear them twice a year, and there's a steady market for them, better than there is for calves.
They just don't fit the old cowboy image.
This country is natural for goats. They do good on live oak and brush that'd starve a cow. And what the goats won't eat, the sheep will. A man's got to go with the country and raise whatever fits it. He can't change the country to suit himself.
When they show Texas ranches on television, it's never sheep and goats. It's always horse and cattle and cowboys.
When they talk about Texas oil, they don't show some poor old boy out yonder digging a ditch with a dull shovel, but he's part of it too. Without him, there wouldn't be no rich fellers in tall glass towers.
Darkness was just beginning to lift when a bend in the rough road revealed two steel-towered windmills, a set of cedar picket and wooden corrals, a small frame house, and a steel barn not unlike Wes Hendricks's.
This is all there is to it? Not much to show for the reputation.
This ain't the headquarters. This is Live Oak Camp. Best part of the whole outfit, I always thought. Small but fine. Like a real fine woman.
Jim Ed saw no comparison. Others tied to fences. Jim Ed saw three school-age boys hunched beside the barn step. One was Bill Roper's son, Johnny. Johnny pointed, and the other two boys stood up to stare at Jim Ed. Jim Ed's stomach drew into a knot, for new situations and strange people always made him uneasy. He had no shared experience with hill country small-towners and ranch folk. He could argue with some validity that they did not even share a language. Two men leaned against a fence, talking. Rather, one was talking and the other was listening with the desperate air of hope for an outside interruption. Wes and Jim Ed provided that opportunity. Stocky Bill Roper stepped away from the fence and walked to meet Wes's pickup. The other man followed, his thin face dark and serious.
Come in.
Roper's broad smile lighted up the morning.
Saving coffee for you in the kitchen, Wes.
Roper gave Jim Ed a tentative nod that could be taken for a greeting without committing himself.
Tater, this is Fuller Gibson. He ranches on the far side of Live Oak.
Gibson, 50-ish, had the leathered face of an outdoor man and a hand that felt as rough as it looked. He acknowledged Jim Ed with reservation, studying him up and down. Jim Ed mustered a stern determination and stared into those critical eyes like an Aggie freshman bullying his way through a line of upperclassmen. Fuller picked up his monologue where the interruption had left it.
Wes, I was just telling Bill, this cattle market is as sick as ever I seen it. I just don't know how they expect a man to stay. It's them Chicago traders manipulating the futures market. They're fixing to ruin us all.
I've been saying the same thing for years.
Jim Ed suspected his grandfather wouldn't know the futures market from a flea market. Wes turned to Jim Ed.
Let's unload the horses before we go to the house. They like solid ground under their feet.
The house was every bit as old as the one Wes lived in. From the look of it, no one stayed here permanently. It was used as a camp for working days like this one, and probably for city hunters who came in the fall to terrorize the deer herd. Three or four men stood in the kitchen, coffee cups in their hands. They had a few words for Wes, and all spoke civilly to Jim Ed once they realized he belonged with the old man. He was aware that most stared at him, especially the t-shirt and his small hat. Some showed amusement, some disapproval. Well, he thought defensively, they can't accuse me of trying to look like something I'm not. Bill Roper poured Jim Ed a cup of black coffee from a big pot on the stove. He pointed to the table.
There's a donut or two left yonder. Sugar and cream if you need them, Tater.
Jim Ed supposed the Tater name was gonna haunt him like a pregnant girlfriend, however hard he might try to shed it. He bit into the last fried donut and knew it had not come out of a grocery sack. It had the rich flavor of homemade. He noticed a girl standing in a doorway that led to a dark back room. At first glance, he'd mistaken her for a boy. She wore a boy's loose work clothes, an old blue shirt, and jeans faded almost to the color of a summer sky. They gave her about as much shape as a sack of feed. A cowboy hat set squarely and firmly on her head looked as battered as if horses tromped on it every morning but Sunday. What he noticed most about her were her large and expressive eyes, brown almost to the point of being black, like those of some pretty Mexican girls he had seen. She returned his stare without blink or blush. He judged her to be 20, give or take a couple of years. Having seen no other women, he assumed she was responsible for the donuts. He held up the bit left of his.
This is good. I wish you made a dozen more.
Those dark eyes turned to ice.
I can cook, but I'm not a cook. Hallie Roper made these.
Her manner took him across the grain.
Well, then, if you don't cook, what do you do around here?
The ice thickened.
Hell, Pilgrim, I supervise this operation.
Jim Ed dipped a finger into the sugar where the donuts had been.
Pilgrim? You've seen too many John Wayne movies.
Maybe you haven't seen enough of them. You sure don't look like Wes Hendricks.
Under other circumstances, he might have regarded that as a compliment, but he knew she didn't mean it as one. She gave him a long, hard study, head to foot.
In fact, you don't look like anything, except maybe a breakout from the San Antonio Zoo. I doubt you'll do enough work here to earn that donut you just put away.
I'll earn my keep.
Maybe. Let's just see what the day brings, Pilgrim. I bet you'll be hunting water and shade before 10 o'clock.
You're on.